A man had done well for himself. He had done very well. He labored hard throughout his life. He wisely saved and he invested. The abundance which was produced by his work and by his smart decisions could not be stored in his current barns, not singular barn. So what should he do? He decided, I will build bigger ones. Now I can sit back and enjoy the fruits of my labor. And he said to himself, you have ample goods to retire and enjoy the easy life. You can eat, drink, and be merry. He was a Near Easterner, but he had accomplished what we might today call the American dream. And he had done so through a combination of his hard work and ingenuity. But God said to him, you fool, you will die this very night. Then who will get everything you worked for? Now, this is a parable, and Jesus told this parable after someone in a crowd yelled out to him, teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. And so this parable served as a warning to this man. It served as a warning to the disciples. It served as a warning to us. And the warning is simply this, watch out for covetousness. Or as the New American Standard Bible clarifies well, Luke 12:15, then he said to them, beware and be on your guard against every form of greed. For not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions. What is covetousness? It's a sinful desire to have something which you do not have, especially something which someone else does have. What is greed? It is a sinful, insatiable desire for more than one needs. In either case, dissatisfaction and discontent is at the root of this sin. And all discontent is ultimately not discontent with our circumstances, but rather with God Himself, who is the giver of what we have and that by which our lives are sustained. Now, while this discontentment can manifest in blatant coveting of your neighbor's house or his wife, his manservant or maidservant, his ox, his donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor, it can also manifest itself in far more subtle, far more culturally acceptable ways. There is no suggestion in the parable that the rich man had ever coveted what his neighbors had or had taken anything from them. He was a hard worker. He was a man of business savvy. In our capitalist understanding, plentiful production and wealth growth are not only first order priorities, but they are also commendable. His accomplishment, according to our culture, is something to emulate, not excoriate. And yet, what does God call this man? Fool. Why? Jesus answers the question in verse 21. So is the man who stores up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. The riches this man cared for were not the eternal ones, but the ones in the here and now. Had this man violated the spirit of the 9th and 10th commandments to not covet? Absolutely. But more importantly, he had violated the first commandment. You shall have no other gods. He had not feared, loved, and trusted God above all else, but had instead placed his trust in his wealth, had placed his trust in his hard work, had placed his trust in his ingenuity to acquire wealth and to manage it. He had committed idolatry, not only of wealth, but also of himself. He had not remembered nor acknowledged that all that he had, both his life and his wealth, was always a gift of God and from God. Whatever one's mouth may say, the psalmist reminds us, the fool says in his heart, there is no God. And Jesus calls this man a fool. All that he had worked for, all that he had built, all of it was taken from him in an instant. Or, to be more precise, he was taken from it. In the parable, God asks, whose will they be now? Who will get everything that you worked for? And the answer is implied by Jesus. The answer is someone else. someone who didn't labor for it, someone who didn't ingeniously produce it or its growth, and quite possibly someone who will squander it. What now is the rich man's inheritance? We heard it in Colossians 3 this morning, verses 5 and 6. Put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature, sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed, which is idolatry. Because of these, the wrath of God is coming. This foolish rich man's inheritance is God's wrath. Because his greed is idolatry. God is not his God. He has many gods. His hard work is a god. His business savvy is a god. His wealth produced by this is a god. His retirement is a god. But in the end, they, like all false gods, fail. This is, as the wisest of men, Solomon says in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 2, vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Now, vanity is futility, or more simply, foolishness. It is meaninglessness, and it is emptiness. And Solomon, nearing the end of his life, he is the preacher here, says this particular vanity is the vanity of vanities. It is the emptiest of emptiness. It is the most foolish of foolishness. What specifically? He says, all. All is vanity. And he continues in verses 12 to 14 of the first chapter. I, the preacher, have been king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I applied my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. It is an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. I have seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and striving after wind. Early in life, you'll recall that Solomon had asked God for the gift of what? Wisdom. And God graciously gave it to him. But if you know the history of Solomon, if you know his story, you know that he applied that wisdom to his own life far less often than he should have. And there were terrible consequences. Now Solomon has reached the end of his life, and he looks back, and what does he see? He sees vanity. He sees emptiness. Ironically, this wisest of man sees his own foolishness. He looks back. He sees an unhappy business. Now, Solomon had become an expert in politics and the ways of people and philosophy and sciences and economics, history, law, and so much more. He had searched for the meaning of life and discovered this. To do so is like chasing the wind. It was impossible to pin down. It was impossible to catch. The moment that he thought that he did, he would open his hands and find out there was nothing there. And it wasn't for lack of trying. In any area of life, Solomon had worked hard, and often he had worked ingeniously. But now, we move to chapter 2 and begin with verse 18. I hated all my toil, in which I toil under the sun, seeing that I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool? Yet he will be master of all for which I toiled and used my wisdom under the sun. This also is vanity. Solomon looks back at all of his work, a lifetime of work, and he now hates it. Knowing that in death, he would be taken from all that it had accomplished. Worse, it would just be passed on to someone else who may be wise or may be a fool. Regardless, this someone else would be the master of all that Solomon had worked for day and night, committing his entire physical self to it, committing his entire intellectual self to it. And he says this also is vanity. Just a few moments ago, we sang from Psalm 49 these words. Be not afraid when a man becomes rich, when the glory of his house increases. For when he dies, he will carry nothing away. His glory will not go down after him. For though while he lives, he counts himself blessed, and though you get praise when you do well for yourself, his soul will go to the generation of his fathers, who will never again see light. Man in his pomp, yet without understanding, is like the beasts that perish. Not only is coveting sin, coveting is also foolishness. A man becomes rich. The psalmist says his house increases, and then what? He dies. He takes nothing with him. In this life, he may be blessed with goods. The psalmist goes so far as to say, in this life, you may be blessed with goods. You may even be praised for your hard work which accomplished it. You may be praised for your business savvy, but you will die. And if you spend this life in pride of material accomplishments, the psalmist says, you have the understanding of an animal. You are not wise, you are a fool. And now in profound disappointment, Solomon exclaims, chapter 2, verse 20 and 21, so I turned about and gave my heart up to despair over all the toil of my labors under the sun, because sometimes a person who has toiled with wisdom and knowledge and skill must leave everything to be enjoyed by someone who did not toil for it. This also is vanity and a great evil. In other words, Solomon could see what was coming, though he didn't live to see it happen. If you know Solomon's story well, you'll know that he was succeeded by his son and heir, Rehoboam. And Rehoboam took foolish advice from friends rather than the wise men around him. The advice such that the entire kingdom revolted against him. And then the result of that was the division of the kingdom into Israel in the north and Judah in the south. In other words, in just one generation, Solomon's life accomplishments were totally upended. Verses 22 to 23. What is a man from all the toil and striving of heart with which he toils beneath the sun? For all his days are full of sorrow, and his work is a vexation. Even in the night his heart does not rest. This also is vanity. Solomon looks back over his life and he sees a life in which nearly every one of his days was so overcome by his business, by his concerns, that it spilled over into his nights. His mind and his heart continuing to race even as he tried to sleep, concerned not only with the decisions of the past, but also the concerns of the future. And he looks back and he says, and for what? All this work that I did during the day, all my savvy that I applied to every situation, all my sleepless nights in which I worried for the future, what was it for? It was for nothing. Here he was at the end of his life, and daily toil and striving of the heart under the sun had not brought him any meaning, had not brought him any fulfillment. Sleepless nights accomplished nothing except exhaustion. You've heard it said, life is hard, and then you die. Or you've heard it said, life's not fair, and then you die. Or maybe you've heard it said another way, which I won't repeat. This also is vanity. Solomon is at the brink of despair, and if we're being honest, so often are you. So before we move into the next verses, I want you to note something about Solomon's description of his heart here. For what was his heart striving? Striving day and night. Ultimately, it was striving in such a way that it created days of sorrow and works which were a vexation and restless nights. He was striving after vanity. He was striving after meaninglessness. He was striving after success and wealth and found even then nothing but emptiness. St. Augustine of Hippo, in his confession, says, "Our hearts are restless until they can find rest in you." Nearing the end of life, Solomon surveyed it all to find that his heart, despite his best intentions, had been in the wrong place. Now remember what Jesus said, Luke 12:21. "So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." And now, nearing the end of his life, Solomon's wisdom serves him rightly once again, verses 24 and 25. He says, "There is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also, I saw, is from the hand of God. For apart from him, who can eat or who can have enjoyment?" Now, let's pause and think through verse 24. Because if you don't read it closely or carefully, if you don't listen to it closely or carefully, following all that Solomon has said thus far about vanity of vanities and his great despair, you could easily hear what he is saying here in this way. You could hear it as, "What difference does it make? Let's eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. You only live once, so you might as well live it up." But if you read it or hear it that way, you have missed how Solomon has framed this finding enjoyment in his toil and what that toil accomplished. Note what he says. All of it, always, was from the hand of God. It was always gift, all of it. Apart from God, the Creator, who indeed could eat? Apart from God, the Sustainer, who indeed could enjoy his gifts? You weren't created for the purpose of glorifying yourself. You were created for the purpose of glorifying God. And until you get that right, you will continue to be despairing. You will continue to be vexed. You will continue to be restless, no matter how hard you work, no matter how much you acquire. You were made to glorify God and to enjoy Him. Your toil of every day serves that end. His gifts serve that end. In God alone do you find life's meaning. In God alone do you find eternal pleasure. Without God, you will never be satisfied, and your heart will not stop striving after the wind. Without Him, you will never find a pleasure or joy that lasts, and you will be chasing after more, continually trying to capture the wind, to open your hands to find them empty. This is vanity, vanity of vanities. Later, as Solomon is wrapping this book up in chapter 12, verse 13, he says this, "The end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. To be rich toward God is to fear, love, and trust Him above all else, and to obey His commandments, which are summed up in this way." Luke 10:27. Jesus said, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." In God through Christ, emptiness becomes fullness. Meaninglessness becomes meaning. Foolishness becomes wisdom. Vanity becomes value. This is all true as your heart finds its rest in God through Christ. And all your toil, all your work, all your accomplishments are not defeated by death, but rather continue to serve God's eternal purposes. Consider St. Paul, Ephesians chapter 2, verse 10. For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. Your work is no longer just making ends meet, but in Christ, your work is being used to meet God's ends. Romans 8:28, and we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, all things, for those who are called according to his purpose. Therefore, Solomon says, there is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. And St. Paul helps us to understand it when he says, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. This is your purpose. It's all gift from God's hands. It always was, even to those who don't believe it. But believing does have everlasting reward. Verse 26, for to the one who pleases him, God has given wisdom and knowledge and joy, but to the sinner, he has given the business of gathering and collecting, only to give to one who pleases God. This also is vanity and striving after wind. The one who fears, loves, and trusts God above all else is given wisdom, knowledge, and joy in the midst of life's toils, is given an eternal inheritance, imperishable, undefiled, unfading, kept in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy and thieves do not break in and steal. But the one who does not fear, love, and trust God above all else simply has a life of toil and vexation of days and restlessness of nights, the results of their labor ultimately given over to whomever God pleases and ordains. That is a life of vanity and striving after the wind. Therefore, Paul tells us in Colossians chapter 3, whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ. Amen.